Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL, the podcast where we throw out the rule book, where we dive in head first to the real and raw, unapologetic journey of living the best life. That includes lots of music. This is your go-to space for empowerment, for deep healing and owning your authenticity like the boss that you are. We're here to break down walls and slay self-doubt. Vibe to the soundtrack of your soul. With every beat and lyric, we'll move through stories that heal and empower. You can live your fullest and most badass life. Welcome to The Authentic Life with KL. This episode of The Authentic Life of KL is brought to you by Break the Silence, a nonprofit created using music as a platform to raise awareness for mental health, suicide prevention, and recovery of all kinds, offering hope and starting the hard conversations to bring communities together. Hey guys, it's Kitty, and today I have with me Miss Jessie Rose McMaster. She is holistic fitness trainer, yoga teacher, and retreat leader, and I'm so happy to have you here to talk today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Good. Yeah. So you do a lot of things other than that. So this is just the small things that we're touching on, which are actually some of the biggest things. So can you tell everybody a little bit about what you do and just what you do?
All right.
It's a big question.
I do a lot of things.
A lot.
I run my own business and I call it holistic fitness, but that holistic fitness is really just kind of the umbrella term, the keyword term that encompasses all the things that I do. I like to say that I help people reframe their relationship with movement and health and their body, reframe their relationship with their body. How do I do that? I started doing that through yoga. That's kind of where I started on this path. I was a college athlete. I played soccer my whole life, but being an athlete gave me this distorted view on my body and on movement. And I was in a lot of pain physically and mentally. I just was struggling. And then I found yoga, and yoga was like a big eye-opening moment for me. So that's what kind of started me on the journey. I started teaching yoga. And once I started teaching yoga, things kind of snowballed from there. That was back in 2012. And so since then, I have done all my Pilates certification. I've done all the Pilates trainings. I've done everything from TRX to trampoline to spin to Zumba. Teaching Zumba was one of my favorite things because that was a lot of fun. And then about 5 years ago, I became a massage therapist. So then I got to, going even further in my training and really learn how to help people on a different level. Becoming a massage therapist really changed. Instead of just movement, now I was able to help people really affect tissue and understand cells and tissue and the health of cells and tissue. And now in holistic fitness, I work with groups, I work with corporations and businesses and individuals to create customized health and wellness plans. So most of the time I tend to get a lot of people that are either dealing with physical pain or coming off of some sort of injury, or, they've maybe done some rehab and now they're trying to find, okay, what do I do next? I'm not ready for gyms and group fitness classes.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what to do on my own. What do I do? And I kind of come in and I'm like, let's take a holistic approach to this so that we can create a plan that is doable for you wherever you're at in your life, but also something that you can stay consistent with, because
that's so important.
It's so important.
Yeah.
And, as an athlete, I really have struggled. Like, I'm all in, all or nothing mentality.
Yeah.
And, so that ends up burning out. And I think a lot of us deal with that, is like, we get really motivated and inspired and we want to do all the things, and then we burn out.
Crash and burn.
We're exhausted, and then we're fatigued and our backs hurt. And, so I really, that's why I say reframing our relationship with this thing called fitness to something that is becomes more of something we want to do, something we enjoy, so that we can be consistent. Because this is our body that we have here. This spirit is in this body here on this planet. And as we drive this body around for as many years as we can, why not make it, why not feel as awesome as we can?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I am so much there. Yeah. It's what we have. And if you can't enjoy the things you're doing, you might do them, but you're not going to do them with all your heart and then make sure it's like going to a job that maybe might not be your favorite job. You'll go, but you're not going to like do it fully unless you do find some joy in it. And if you can find joy in those things that you need to do for yourself and your body, it's definitely going to make you show up fully anyway.
100%. 100%. And most of the time, it really is a perspective shift. You know, we can all find those times in our lives where we were struggling, and then it feels like you're like in a hole and you're buried and you can't get out. But then all of a sudden, you get this perspective shift, and all of a sudden, things change. And, you know, on the other side, you're like, oh, wow, that perspective has just really changed, you know. And so I use the health and fitness world because that's the industry that I'm in. And I feel so blessed that this is where I landed because I didn't know I was going to be here. This really just was kind of handed to me. But now I get to use that health and fitness world as like, okay, let's shift our perspectives on how we care for ourselves. You know, it's a lot of self-care. And, a lot of us are not doing self-care. We're just coping, right? We're just, you know, trying to make
Self-care is
ourselves.
something we're taught. I think I say we're taught, but we're conditioned, you know, growing up that self-care is something that's selfish. But it's like you can't care for other people unless you take care of yourself. So where did we lose all that? It's a really interesting perspective to look at how far we've moved away from self-care and then trying to bring it back. Everybody has guilt and they have like, I can't do it, you know, and all those things. So it really is a perspective change when you start moving in that direction.
Absolutely.
Well, I want to go ahead and move on into a little bit into your story. First, I want to ask you, with the world being dark, right, and a lot of yucky things, I say yucky because I talk to my grandkids like that. There's a lot of bad, gross, yucky things, and the world is dark. If that's what you kind of find yourself in, there's a lot of beauty, though. What is something that inspires you or brings you back when you start sinking?
I mean, I want to say gratitude, but that's like, you know, it seems like a all encompassing, but that was something I had to practice because when the world, I feel like the world starts sinking, or I end up going into a lot of like self-sabotaging habits or patterns, self-sabotaging patterns. And I really tend to beat myself up a lot. And you know, when like the sadness and the doom and gloom is really getting me, I really have been practicing to just stay with the gratitude. And you know, I've had to practice it. It wasn't something that came natural to me because what I was conditioned, like you said, programmed to do was to feel like the victim. And to feel like things were happening at me. And then I realized that with an attitude of gratitude, right, with a mentality that focuses on, you know, the things to be grateful for, that shift, again, in perspective, it really lightens things up and it lets you see that, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. It lightens it up. And so you don't feel so heavy. But I would say also another thing is learning to use my movement as my medicine. That has been huge because when my mental health is struggling, which it does, I'm not perfect and I struggle with the stress and the anxiety and the panic attacks. But when I notice, now I have my comeback rate is so much better because when I notice that it's like up here is what is effed up right now, is I'm just like, whoa.
Yeah.
Now I know how to use movement as my medicine, rather than things that are more self-destructive. So that has been really huge. And understanding how to use my movement not in a way to punish myself
Right.
or like, because a lot of it is anger and frustration that comes up for me, which then what used to happen is then my movement was very aggressive and not nice to me. But now understanding how I can be intense because I am in, I have a lot of feelings. I am intense,
Right.
but I can get some of, I can be passionate and not aggressive, and I can use my movement to kind of get the angst out in a way that doesn't hurt me.
Yeah.
So that has been a really big part of my journey too, is like, okay, my movement is actually like my medicine, and how do I, and what kind of movement do I need?
I love the fact that you're talking about changing your movements because I've always been, I mean, I've been on this journey as far as mental health, but I've been overweight my whole life and I've always struggled with it. And I have like lymphatic drainage, I have lymphedema, lipedema, I have a lot of fascial issues. And for me, I know that there's only certain things I can do. And so then I get angry because I'm trying, right? And then you go into self-sabotage behavior. So I love that you're talking about all that. So I decided that for me, my small start is at break. I have a 30-minute break and there's a gym right upstairs. I literally have no reason not to go ride a bike or walk. And so that's what I've started doing. And as much as I hurt every day, because I do with the things I have, I don't hurt as bad whenever I move. And I think that's something so many people don't understand. And we use it overall humans just as an excuse. If it hurts, I'm not going to do it. But even I've noticed just in the time that I've started doing that, my pain is way less when I'm moving. And so I love the conversation about it because it does. I think trauma stores in your body and it fights to let go. And you have to want it and you have to find ways that it works for you too. And it's not the same for everybody. And it's not the same for you every single day either.
Yeah,
I love that.
absolutely.
Yeah,
That's
I love
huge.
those things. And to go back on gratitude, I think for the longest time, when I heard that before I started doing the gratitude, that it was so cliche, right? People say, just be grateful. Be grateful for what you have. They don't understand that when you're on a spiritual journey and you're just on a healing journey, whatever that may be, that it's not always love and light and everything's like it's hard. Like I feel like when you're trying to heal, it's harder than like you're choosing to go walk through this. And finding the small things to be grateful for is something that has turned my life around too. You know, in the mornings, if I start like a list of like, oh, someone said they liked my glasses, it might be silly, but then it's like, okay, well, the universe is saying, hey, like we connected that way. And so it helps me start to see things differently. So I really connect with you using the gratitude too, even though it sounds very cliche for people who don't do it yet.
Yeah, and I get it. Even when it came out of my mouth, I'm like, I know this sounds so cliche.
Gratitude. Yeah.
Like,
No,
I
but
know,
it's true.
yeah, like teenage Jesse would have listened to that and been like, okay.
So grateful. So grateful. All right. It's true, but it really does change because we can get in a funk and like I've had a bad week or whatever, but I'm always like, I've had a bad week, but I still have great things happening. You can have a bad week and still be moving forward and healing. Like it doesn't, you don't have to be just one thing. And I think that, you can be grateful and be sad, or you can be grateful and struggling. It doesn't, it's not one or the other. Like you can do that. And so I love it. So when did you know that holistic fitness was something that was really paramount for you to get into, that it was just a calling that you were like, now I'm doing it.
Well, I feel like I was always, especially like I didn't start practicing yoga until like my third year of college. So I was already, kind of a young adult. And throughout high, in my adolescence, young adult years, I was always looking for things. Like I always felt older than I actually was. Like I didn't feel like I was with my peers in high school. I just always felt like there's got to be something else. You know, like have this like, hold on, what they're teaching us in school, like is this a joke? It is a joke. But you know, like I just had this feeling like, okay, I just have to like get through this stage of my life and maybe an answer will come later. I also went to Catholic school my whole life. That's my parents, that was their way of like keeping us in control. So, I was also raised with that perspective of a very lots of you know, Catholicism and religion. And with that also, I understood the benefits of, I liked spirituality, I liked community, and I liked, you know, pieces of it, but there was also a lot of pieces that were missing that seemed completely skewed to me, that weren't helpful. So then when I was, you know, in those young adult years where I'm trying to figure out, okay, what do I want to do with my life? I was struggling with a lot of physical pain. I was also r a lot of anxiety, and I needed tools. I needed tools to help me. And yoga fell into my lap, and I started practicing yoga. And it was the first time that I was, you know, doing this exercise, but noticing that, wow, my anxiety is so much better. I'm sleeping better. I'm not waking up with panic attacks. I'm, you know, like I'm nicer to people. Like, what? Like, how is, you know, my exercise making me nicer to people? This is weird. You know, so I just started to notice things like that. And then, you know, I started teaching yoga and, you know, that it started slowly, but I started to kind of build this, you could call it a career. And you know, then I discovered Pilates. And when I discovered Pilates, I realized that, oh, this yoga, as far as the physical things that I needed in order to heal my back pain, because that's what I was dealing with, yoga was great. Yoga taught me so much, and it is the foundation for everything that I do. But it didn't teach me like spinal alignment, it didn't teach me core stability, it didn't teach me joint stability, which is what my body was physically lacking in order to get out of pain. So then I, you know, I started on that journey and was like, wow, okay. And then I became a body worker and understanding cellular health and tissue health, lymphatic flow, like understanding my lymphatic system. So, you know, it started with yoga is like this holistic idea of like, oh wow, there's something more, the connection between my physical body and my mental health. But then understanding that like it wasn't just yoga, like, and I needed the Pilates, but I also didn't just need Pilates, I also needed the body work aspect of it. And then all the trainings that I've done over the years, all that tying together. I really think the like holistic part probably, you know, the yoga and the Pilates training were like fundamental, like putting those two pieces together. Because Pilates is very physical. It's very alignment based. It's very, going through a Pilates training is very extensive. You learn like a lot of anatomy and physiology. And the yoga was more of like the mental, spiritual, you know, it's like this a little, it's not maybe as, it, there is physical aspects, but it's not, it's more for your mental health more than anything. And so when I started to kind of put those together, and then I started to work with clients, especially my private clients, I realized like there is no one size fits all. There isn't. There isn't. We are all different. We need different things at different times in our lives. And so, like, a holistic approach is what is needed. I don't know. That kind of answers your question, I hope.
Yeah, I was like, when is, like a lot of times it's like people will have like, that was it, and then sometimes it just falls in and it's like, no, I need this. And then it's the downhill. I call it downhill. It's really an amazing experience, but it's like everything just starts rolling and it doesn't
Like
stop. And
snowballs.
right. Yeah. And you want more and you want more, and you want more, and you see the benefits. And so you just keep going. So yeah, absolutely. I do want to talk about, I was looking at your website earlier, and you have a lot of information on nervous system regulation. And that's something that I love talking about because I think people do not, and I still have so much to learn about it, but the whole panic attacks, the whole like vagus nerve and like all the different things interconnect, people don't realize how much it affects your body. And so, do you mind talking a little bit about that and the importance of it and some ideas maybe, or just some information on it?
Your nervous system controls everything. Everything. And when you really understand anatomy and physiology, and I'm a total anatomy nerd. Like once I started learning about the body, I still to this day cannot get enough. And I am always learning. Like every time, I have a client that has an issue they're dealing with. I am studying, I am reading all the research that's out there, and I'm always doing new trainings. But no matter what training I do, it all is controlled by the nervous system. So, like, you cannot function, nothing in your body can function without the nerves that are coming out of your brain and your spinal cord. Nothing. With that being said, I also believe in neuroplasticity. So the nerves that are coming out of your, which is, it's called your nervous system, your brain and your spinal cord and all the nerves that come out of there. This is what is your nervous system. Your nerves, just like your muscles, can grow and adapt, right? So they could also atrophy. So when you're not using certain neural pathways, that neural pathway, because our bodies are amazingly adaptable. They are going to adapt to whatever you're doing. So if you're thinking a certain way and in a certain routine every day, and it's the same thing every day, your body and your nervous system are like, okay, if that's what you're going to do, then we are going to build the body, the nervous system, the muscles, all of it around this routine that you do every day. And so we're going to reinforce that in the connective tissue, in the way the nerves are communicating with everything, because this is what you do every day. So let's make sure it's the best that it can be. But what happens is then we get stuck in a rut because the body's like, well, now you've adapted to this pattern that you're doing. And in order to change that, you have to develop some new neural pathways. Whether we're talking about like a new morning habit, morning routine, you're finally like waking up your glutes when you exercise, like whatever it is. But what you're doing is you're now creating new nerves into new areas, new pathways. So also your nerves. They that your automatic nervous system, which is the part of your nervous system you don't have to think about. So it's the things that happen automatically, your digestion, circulation. You don't have to tell your heart to beat. It's amazing. It's just going to beat. You don't have to tell your stomach to do stomach things or your liver to do the liver things. It's just going to happen. But when there is excessive tension around that highway of communication, like I like to think of it like a traffic jam. So the nerve that comes out of my brain and talks to my stomach, right? There is a nerve that comes down, talks to my stomach. If there's excessive tension in the muscles or connective tissue around that highway, right? It has to go from here all the way down into my stomach. And if there's tension along that highway, it creates a traffic jam. So the signal trying to get to my stomach to tell my stomach to do its stomach things is inhibited. So now my digestion is going to slow down. Maybe I become constipated or I have a really hard time digesting food. And the issue is actually that there is a lack of communication or the communication highway, there's a traffic jam. And so, one of the things with movement and lymphatic flow is a big part of that is we're clearing out the traffic jams so that the nervous system can do its job, can communicate. We're clearing the highways, getting the traffic out, getting all the junk off the highway so that it's a nice, smooth drive from brain to whatever organ or brain to whatever muscle. And a lot of us don't even realize, but the issue is that your system is backed up. There is stagnation in your body, and that stagnation is inhibiting your nervous system's ability to communicate to those certain things. And this is it, we all have it in certain ways, and it's caused by different things. Trauma is a big part of that, whether that's it doesn't matter, but any sort of trauma, right? Our body tenses as a way to protect against what we perceive as trauma. So if we're not dealing with that trauma, the body's going to stay in that protective tight, you know, it does it in different areas to protect ourselves, but that protection is inhibiting the communication again. It could be like you broke a bone when you were 5 years old and you didn't realize it, but there's a bunch of scar tissue in that area. Scar tissue doesn't allow the communication to flow through. Yeah, so the when there is a backup or a traffic jam, the nervous system can't talk to the pieces. So a big part of that, you said the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve runs from your, it's one of your cranial nerves, runs through your neck, down through your diaphragm. And the vagus nerve is a big one because the vagus nerve is the nerve that is helping you get out of the sympathetic part of your nervous system, which is like the go part. It's like your foot on the gas pedal. This is how we are able to like check things off the to-do list and like feel some, you know, like we're getting things done, we're going. And then you have parasympathetic nervous system. And these two parts of that nervous system, they need to work together and they need to balance each other. But what happens is we get caught in the go, go, go part, even when we think, well, I'm sleeping, but sometimes we're sleeping and we're not really in rest mode. We're sleeping still in sympathetic. We're sleeping and our muscles are twitching and we're like agitated as we sleep. And so the body isn't really getting that transition into what we call parasympathetic. And in the parasympathetic is where the body can recover. So it's a constant daily, it needs to be a constant daily thing of like go, 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 getting all the shit done, and then relax and recover. And then you do it again, go, 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 and then you relax and recover. And it needs to be this balance, but many of us are completely out of balance. And it's mostly because we're stuck in the go, go, go mode. A big thing, let me go back to vagus nerve. Your vagus nerve runs through your diaphragm, and your diaphragm is your main muscle in breathing. And we want the diaphragm, right? It's a muscle kind of sits like this under your ribs. It's huge and it's a big tendinous muscle under the ribs. But the vagus nerve and many other nerves have to run through the diaphragm. If you're breathing shallow for a majority of the day and you breathe about 22,000 times a day, and you're like barely moving your diaphragm. That is causing a lot of tension around the nerves that are trying to pass through it. So, something simple like slowing down your breath, breathing into your belly and your ribs, a simple fix. And at first, it'll be hard to breathe deep, especially if you've been breathing shallow for a really long time.
It
But
feels like
as you
you're
start,
out of breath almost sometimes when you do it.
And I work, and honestly, I created a whole program called Breath Core, and it's all about learning how to use your breath to move your ribs and your core. And then essentially, the program builds until now you're using your breath to connect with your core strength and actually support your body. So, but the first part is you got to get the diaphragm to move, which means you got to get your belly and your ribs to move because it's all attached. And as soon as you do that, so now your diaphragm's moving like this, down and up, and that's what we want. It's a full range of motion down and up. And now the nerves that go through that, they're able to communicate with your gut. And the vagus nerve, which is the main one that runs through that diaphragm, it's the nerve that tells your body to go into parasympathetic. It's the nerve that tells your body, okay, hey, now it's time to rest and digest. Let's digest this food that's in the stomach and the small intestine. Let's move it through the intestines and let's get it all the way out of the body. Let's get all those waste products out. Let's, like recover. Now is recovery time. But if there's a bunch of tension around the vagus nerve never gets to communicate that with your internal organs. And so you stay on overdrive where your body is producing way too much cortisol, way too much adrenaline, and you're not digesting food properly. You know, like, yeah, you're way up here. You're like, ah.
See ya.
So that was like a long-winded answer, but I get very
Yeah.
passionate
No,
about the
I
nervous
love it.
system.
I think that there's so much there, and I don't know a huge amount about it, but in my experience, I've had that knowledge of how important it is to breathe, and had different health things and realize that a lot of it, so many people have panic attacks. Like I see that a lot. There's a lot of friends and then people within the groups that I work with. Panic attacks are a huge thing. And not sleeping is a huge thing. Not being able to recover the next day is a huge thing. And I think breathing is one of those things that helps with so many things because it's one of the only things we truly can control in life when we learn how to do it, right? You can't control, you can recognize self-sabotage, you can see all these things, but you can't control a lot of things in life, but you can control how to breathe, how you breathe.
And that's what, and then that's why I always go back to it because it's free.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need a doctor. You don't need, and you have it with you 24/7.
Yeah.
It's not a, you know, it doesn't cost you anything to change the way you're breathing. But as soon as an Going back to the nervous system, but as soon as you take your breath from something that is automatic into something that you're controlling, however you're controlling it, there's many different ways, like we can breathe in all different ways to create all different kinds of things in the body. But as soon as you switch it from automatic to now you're the pilot and you're controlling it, there is a lot of research showing that you switch your brain activity. You go from sitting in the back of your head, which the back of the brain, the amygdala, which is more of like the primitive part of our brain. You now the front of your brain lights up. This is the more evolved part of our brain. And so now, just by changing your breath, now you're in control. You're in the frontal lobe of your brain, and now you're like, whoa, here I am. I can feel the start of my panic attack. Okay. Instead of, oh my God, I'm having a panic attack. What do
Here
I
it goes,
do?
and then it gets
Right?
worse, and
And
it gets
that's,
worse.
yeah, we're getting it, and it's hard. And I'm not saying
Yeah,
that this is like an easy
no.
fix, but what I, instead of operating back here in panic, like running around in circles, now you're in the front and you're like, hold on. Okay, let me use this technique. Let me go lay down. Let me turn the lights off. The lights are a little stimulating. I need to take a moment. Right now, you can, it's empowering.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing is because I want to empower people to use what they have. Like my goal when I work with clients is like, maybe eventually you stop working with me because now you got it and you're doing it yourself. And I love that. I have nothing about that. Like,
Yeah.
I want you to. I'm giving you, like, let's just use these tools. I'm sharing different ways to use them and trying to make it easy for you and doable for you. But now now you can go, you're empowered and you can take your health into your own hands.
Yeah.
You know, and your breath, it is, it's the, that's how you start.
Yeah. Yeah,
And
it's
one
important.
thing I do want to say though, just to make it, I like to always bring it back to like, how do we practically apply this? Because it can be very like, okay, yeah, sure, you know?
But how do you do it in everyday life?
Yeah, it's like,
Yeah.
okay, like, all right, cool, Jesse. But one of the things that you have to start practicing when you're not in panic. That's really key. Is so what I tell people is like a 5 minutes a day. You just practice. And on my YouTube, I have a bunch actually of 5 minute breathing practices. Because that's what I share with my clients is just start with 5 minutes a day. Sit, lay down, stand up, however you want to do it, but practice controlling your breath, bringing your breath from the back of your brain into your frontal brain, frontal lobe, and just practice slowing it down. Practice lengthening your exhale. Practice adding a little pause at the top of the inhale and a little pause at the bottom of the exhale. And at first, it feels, you know, especially if you're not used to meditating and stuff like that, it can feel like, all right, what's next? You know, I get it. I was there too. It took me a long time to learn how to meditate, but now I have to meditate because I know how beneficial it is for my mental health. But if you that little investment every day, and maybe 5 minutes is too much, how about we just start with 60 seconds? But that little investment every day is going to pay off. And so you invest 1 minute every day. And then let's say a time comes in your life where it's a traumatic and it's something totally out of your control, and you feel yourself going into your panic attack. But this time will be different because you've invested some time practicing controlling your breath. And so, in that moment of panic, it will change how you, instead of reacting in panic, you'll be able to respond. I'm not saying the panic will go away. You'll probably still feel panic and anxiety, but you'll have tools to manage it. So you got to invest, but you have to invest. It's just like investing money. Like if you want to save up to buy whatever, you got to put a little bit away. And that daily practice, that's like you investing in this bank account so that in that time of emergency, you have something you can pull from.
And I always say, if you want different, you have to do different. And if you're tired of all the stuff that you know you don't like, then you have to do something different. So if it's 60 seconds a day, that's different, and that's a big thing. You have to step outside your comfort zone and do things that may not be your normal, but if you want different, you have to do different.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I get all that. I'm like, I have the same struggles too. Like I am human.
Yeah, and you have to find what works for you in your current season of life. What can you do? Can you do it while you're sitting on the toilet in the morning instead of looking at your phone? Like, could you do that? You know, like you're already going to be there. Like that's what, I just try to like wrapping our brains around things you already do, but how can we tack on something that's just a little different?
Without overwhelming, but then make it something that you can stick to. And I think I just we did we do a book club within our community, and we just did the High Five Habits from Mel Robbins.
Oh,
And
cool.
that's like you give yourself a high five in the morning in the mirror. That's all you do because everybody associates high five with yay. And so you start that off because you're not gonna ever be like, high five, I don't like you. And so it's like it's one of those things that literally as you're brushing your teeth saying high five, that's it. It's like that's it. But it starts your morning with you already doing something positive that you associate. Just everyone associates high fives with good things, and so then it can slowly change who you are. So
I love that. I'm like, yes, high five.
No, it's I really like a lot of her books and things like that, and that one was just really good because it's like just high five. It's all it is. You say you don't have 20 seconds to give yourself a high five, and then people like the gratitude are like, well, that's stupid. Well, Have you tried it?
Yeah.
You don't know. What do you think that we need to do collectively, just as a society, to change the stigma with mental health? There is this huge stigma of we don't talk about it a lot. Nobody else has mental health but issues, but everybody has mental health issues. It's not, I don't think very many people get away with not having that. Because for me, even if you lose someone you love, that causes mental health issues, and it's just something that is a stigma. What do you think we need to do more of?
I think we need to have more conversations like this in schools.
Oh, yeah.
I think that we need to start with our youth. And that's huge. I work with a lot of like young women, women in their teens or 20s, and the amount of struggle and despair is overwhelming. And the amount of self-destructive patterns, like we talked about, like weeks, it's like, okay, why do we have to wait until our 30s and 40s and 50s to finally like get it in our heads? Like, what if we were taught mindful movement in kindergarten and first grade? What if we were taught how to use our breath as a tool for mental health, in fifth grade,
Yeah.
as part of PE,
Yeah. Would
as
the world be a different place?
it
It just
would.
would
And
be.
yeah, and not everybody, because I deal with a lot of teenagers and I think about like when I was their age, would I hear these things that I'm saying? And I'm like, okay, maybe not, but there will be the few that it will stick with, and that will be enough to create change. And I already see it. I know I have a lot of friends that are my age that are having kids, and they're choosing to raise their children in a more conscious way, like using conscious communication when they talk to their children, like teaching their children how to communicate how they feel in a way without blowing up. And I see that, and I'm just like, ugh. Like that's the change. Is like it just starts one person. It starts with like one dad choosing to have a conversation, a nice conversation with their child, and being interested about like, how, tell me how you feel. Like, oh, that's how you, okay, all right, let's discuss this, rather than shaming or making the child feel guilty about how they feel, And I see it happening, and because I am in those circles of yoga and conscious community and stuff like that. And so it is happening. It is happening. But I think that on a societal level, like it's got to be part of the curriculum. It has to be part of like, because there's not going to be enough people like that are doing it. A lot of, there's a lot of us are like, a lot of parents are just trying to get by, and I get it. Like, I get it. Like, I couldn't even imagine. I don't have kids, but I couldn't even imagine, right? Like, trying to raise kids. So, I think having it in the curriculum is huge. Even having it like in high schools, I think would be really huge.
I do too. I think I agree so much with that. I think it brings up with me, I had my kids when I was young, like early, like 20 and 21 and then 27. And so my kids are grown and I have grandkids now. And I think about the difference on how I raised my kids versus my grandkids, because I am a totally different person. And I look at like if my grandson's throwing a fit, with my son, I'd be like, shh, stop, shh. And I'm like, baby, just feel it. Just let him feel it out. Like, let him do it. And it's like, it's just the funniest thing. And I've even gone through, apologize to my kids. Like, I'm sorry, I didn't raise you from a more healed, place. And, but I do, it's funny to watch the difference because I would beat their booty. Like, don't do that. And now I'm just like, just feel it, roll around on the floor until you can self-regulate. It's okay. But it's true though, like even at toddlers, you can teach them go like he's on the spectrum and it's like he has safe spaces that he can go to. That's where he feels safe. And I'm like, for generational trauma healing, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, I think it does start with the kids. And, little ones do not know how to self-regulate, and they've been taught, and we were taught at young ages, that is not, you do not act that way. You do not feel, I don't care if you're upset, don't scream and cry. I get it, but you have to learn to self-regulate, or else we'll be adults like we have been screaming and crying like those toddlers, you know?
Yeah.
So it's
And there's
important.
so many, and it's like, as parents, like, you do the best you can with what you have. And that's okay. And we also need to, like, not get into this cycle of, like, shaming and blaming, you know? And I love the way you're talking about it because it doesn't feel like that at all. It feels like you're like, all right, well, that's where I was at 20 and, like, oops, you know? And, like, apologizing to your kids. My mom has done this. My parents have done the same thing. They're like, hey, sorry about that, you know? And I'm like, you know what? Even as an adult, I really appreciate mom, like you, like saying that, like, okay, cool. Like that heals. We're healing generational trauma
It
just by
does.
talking about it.
It does. It does. But I agree so much on that, because I think, and then when your children act out as parents, you're shamed. So then, it's that whole everybody worries about what everyone else thinks, unless someone should be worried about what you're doing. But I think that it does work that way. And I think the teenagers, that's just kind of fed into them as well. So teenagers definitely don't know how to self-regulate unless someone is showing them actively. And to be the person to do that, you have to be a very special person, because they're not going to connect to us old people. It's like you have to really have a heart for that. So I love that you connect with those young ones like that.
Yeah, it's been really, really cool to work with like young women in that way, you know, and teenagers in that way. It's hard. It's really hard. I'm like, being a teenager, I'm like, that's a hard part of life. That's a hard time.
It
So,
is.
but it
It
is, I
is.
do my best to try to like share what I know. Another thing you were talking, you know, another thing that would really help society is in the medical system. Like here in the West, our medical system is really, you know, you've got a doctor for, you know, you got a physical therapist for your body, and then you have an endocrine doctor, and then you have an ear, nose, throat doctor, and then you have an eyeball doctor, and then you have a teeth doctor, and then you have, and everything is separate. And those doctors are not communicating with each other about you. And we, what that does is it's taught us as a society that all these things are separate. And like we're taught that like, oh, my physical health has nothing to do with my endocrine system. But when you look at what those things are and you really understand, and but I know that's not like these doctors' fault. It's also how they're trained. I just read a book called Good Energy, Bad Energy. Bad Energy, Good Energy. I need to think of the author. I can't think of it. But she was a trained medical professional, trained doctor. And she is goes through in great detail about training as a doctor. And she was a doctor, an ear, nose, throat doctor that then, you know, realized all these things and now is more of a holistic practitioner. But, you know, she talks about how like we doctors, they're not taught to see the body. They're taught, okay, learn this and then choose a specialty. And then now you're only going to focus on this small part of the body. Which is great because, you know, if we're having a heart issue, it's really nice to have a doctor that has only studied the heart and can go in there and know exactly what they need to do. It's amazing. We have amazing technology, and I'm not, you know, trying to talk shit on that, but we're missing some things. We're missing this, like, you know, maybe what's going on in your endocrine system does have something to do with your mental health, you
Oh
know?
gosh, yeah.
You know,
Yeah, there's a
maybe.
lot of like hormones, like thyroid, like you name it. Like there's so many things, and it's, well, go to that doctor, it's not this. And so you just spend time, and then you feel defeated, and then you stop. So.
And the medical system is not set up. It is set up, and the doctors, they cannot advise something that is not their specialty. So even if that doctor does know something about exercise or diet, that's not their specialty. So they can't say something because if they do, they risk being sued, blah, 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 right? So the whole system is just, it's set up really not to help us. It's set up to make money.
I think the whole world's like that, though, right? Divide us all, no matter what. Doctors, people, races, male, female, whatever. Just divide everything. Nobody
Yeah, it's like
can,
all separate. And it's like it doesn't make any sense, because when we really get down to it and we really feel like in our hearts, we know that like this decisiveness, this separateness, this is the problem in all aspects.
It
And if
is.
we
It
could just
is.
like all come together and and can all the body parts work together and all the, it's like, wow, things start to fall into
Metaphorically
place.
and physically.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Metaphorically and physically. Yeah, no, I love that. Well, I have a couple of last questions here. I could talk to you forever on this. I'll have to have you on again because I really do love learning and just kind of connecting on those things that are so important to me as well. So when I am teaching and I'm talking to people about how do you even find what your passion is or what you're here to do, we talk about standing on top of a mountain and having a few moments to say a couple of words, and there's hundreds of people below, and whatever first comes to mind is usually what you're most passionate about that you want them to walk away with. Like mine would be like, "You matter." Like that was mine. What would be something that you would want people to walk away with if they only had a brief moment with you?
What comes to my mind is don't give up. Like don't give up. Like what you know right now is limited. So don't give up. You just need some new tools. You just need some new knowledge. You're not stuck. Don't give up. And
Yeah, no, that's perfect.
that's what comes to my mind, because it's like I think we feel, when you're in physical pain, when you're struggling with mental health, you feel so stuck. And we talked about it at the beginning, like the world closing in and sinking in, and I know that feeling, and you do just want to give up. But you just like there are things out there. Just like what is just, you got to know new things. You need to learn new things.
Keep searching.
Keep
Keep searching.
searching.
Yeah, keep searching. Keep searching.
It's
If
out there.
someone, it is, and there is so much more out there than people think, but you have to be open to make yourself vulnerable to go and dive into those things. I think that was always my hard thing. I'm tough. I can do it myself. I'll do it myself. I'll do it myself. Like I am that girl, and I've learned so much over the past years of like, I can, but I don't have to. If I'm going to do anything myself, let it be give myself self-love. That way I can be the best version of myself for the people I care about. But if people want to find more about you, do you mind sharing where they can find your information and all that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on all the social media platforms. My Instagram and my TikTok is Holistic Fitness Yoga. I'm also on YouTube. I have a lot of videos on my YouTube. So I like to, most people love YouTube. And if you're interested about breath work or yoga, or I have a lot of videos on my YouTube. So you can explore that. My YouTube handle is Holistic Fitness Yogi, Yogi. But all of that is also on my website, which is my name, jessierosemcmaster.com. Jessie, Jessi. A lot of people spell my first name wrong. So Jessie Rose McMaster, that's all on my website. And then, yeah, I'm on Facebook. You can find me on Facebook, connecting wherever you are. On my website also, there is a contact form that goes directly to my email. So I tell people, like, if you have a question, you can literally just email me from my website. And that's a really nice way to, stay in contact if you have any questions like that. I also have a couple really cool free like guides that I have. I have a guide, 8 ways to regulate your nervous system, which is a cool, it's like a 10-page ebook that I created. With clickable links in there to like breathing practices and movement practice, very quick. I'm trying to keep things very digestible, But eight ways to regulate. And I also go into a little bit about your nervous system and understanding, your reactive patterns and what does that look like for the nervous system. And it's all in that ebook. So, eight ways to regulate your nervous system. You can get that off my website. It's like, I think it's right there on my website. And then I just created a guide called Lymph Flow Love. And it's about self lymphatic drainage massage and how to do what is your lymph system? Why should it matter? And then how to do self lymphatic massage as a morning routine in like 2 minutes. I use a dry brush. I mean, that's what I do every morning. It's one of my biggest pain management tools is dry brushing every morning, but it's just lymphatic massage is what I'm doing. I just use my tool is a dry brush. And I use it on my skin. But that guide goes through that. And that's a really good way to, kind of really like go into deep on those two systems, nervous system and lymphatic system.
Yeah, those are definitely impactful. I was showing a friend at work today, or my coworker. I was like, "No, if you do right here, you'll have drainage down your throat." And someone walked up, and so we were all sitting there doing this, But I was like, "I have to do that because I don't. I do struggle with that. I have a plate, like a shake plate, and then I actually have like the body pump that helps, but movement is really what helps me the most, So it's like I have all these tools, but that helps. And I do. I think I saw a video with you doing. A cupping. Did I see that?
Yeah,
You,
I
I do that.
love cupping.
I do too. I do that.
I love the
Yeah.
cupping. The cupping is my favorite. But that might be a little,
Yeah.
sometimes people need, that might be a little like later down the road for
Right,
people,
right.
which I understand, you know.
Sure.
But the vibration plate is great. I love the vibration plate. I think that's awesome. Because sometimes our lymphatic system gets so backed up and like clogged, that vibration plate just like shakes everything loose. You know, and you're just like,
Sometimes I'm teaching and they'll hear it and they're like, "Are you on your plate?" And I'm like, "I am. Sorry. Gotta do what I gotta do."
it
So
helps though. And you know,
it
like
does.
it does. And once you like have some consistency with these self-care practices, you know, you find what works for you and then you're consistent, you feel so much better, you
And
know, and then
that's
you
what
notice when you
keeps you
don't do
going.
it. Yeah, you're like, oh my God, I didn't do my lymphatic massage this morning. Like, no wonder I feel so like stagnant and gross and inflamed.
Yeah, I'm always like my face feels so much more inflamed when I don't do it. And then that's like with me doing the small mini workouts at work. I didn't do it on the weekends when I started. And I was like, "Oh man, I hurt so bad this weekend." And I was like, "Oh, that is the only thing I did not do the same." I was like, "That's so dumb." But it's true. It's so true. So you gotta do. Keep moving. Don't give up, like she said.
Yeah, don't give up. Don't give up. Just, you
Yeah.
know, now with social media and the internet, like you can research anything. But I think also, you know, people get stuck in an algorithm. So like I'll hear like, "Oh, well, social media, my Instagram is like so crappy and negative." I'm like, "Well, that's the algorithm you're in. Like my Instagram is very uplifting." You know, like I'm like my Instagram. I'm like, ooh, so inspired when I look at it.
Now.
But you know, and so you have to also with the social media, be careful what algorithm you're falling into. But it's out there, but you're also being fed that information. So if you're not being fed what you're looking for, you just got to do some extra research, you know? But you know, in high
It's
school,
just,
like I didn't have social media or the internet. Like, you know, that wasn't a thing. So it's like, man, in high school, if I had all these things that it would really help.
yeah, no, it is. And I think the algorithm's interesting because it's just the same thing with life. Like wherever you feed your energy, that's what you're going to get. So if you're doom scrolling for hours at a time over crap that really does not do anything for you, that is literally what you're going to get. Find different things to look at and you will be fed better things.
Yes,
That's
I love
true.
that. It is such a good analogy for life. Like,
Yeah, it is because it's the same type of I mean, I know it's not programming like on a human level, but it really is. It's based on what we do. They study and then feed us whatever crap we're looking at. That's what they're going to feed you. So I think that that's doom scrolling. Man, I love it, but it's not good for you. It's really not.
nope.
All right. Well, the last question, if someone were to come to you and they were struggling with mental health, what are some words of wisdom that you've learned over the years that maybe you might give to them?
Breathe.
Yeah.
Breathe. I take a deep breath.
Yeah, don't go.
Yeah. Take it to slow down. Slow down. You don't have to
Yeah.
solve it all right now.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to have an answer right now.
Yeah.
Like, just breathe.
That's
Breathe and ask for help.